It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Thursday morning, February 9th. I'm Steve Cole. Last night, the Garfield County Planning and Zoning Commission delayed a public hearing on a request for a new zoning district inside the Battlement Mesa PUD. The district would include an injection well operated by URSA Resources. Eric Schmela, Battlement Mesa Company president, told the commission that changes were made to the application, downsizing the injection well footprint. Leslie Robinson of Grand Valley Citizens Alliance told KDNK that this means the injection well will not be near the community's drinking water intake, but she said the goal is to keep all injection wells out of the PUD. County P&Z will look at the issue on March 8th. LGBTQ advocacy group. One Colorado brings its statewide tour to Aspen on Friday. KDNK's Gavin Dahl spoke to One Colorado Executive Director Daniel Ramos to learn more about the group's work and its only event in the Valley.
One Colorado is the state's largest advocacy organization for LGBTQ Coloradans and our families, and we have a number of key priority areas. One of the areas we work in is ensuring that students have access to a safe school. We've built the third largest gay-straight alliance network, working with students all across the state to give them the tools that they need to advocate for safe schools in their communities. We also do a lot of training with educators, making sure that they know the laws, the policies, and the best practices in creating safe and inclusive school environments. We've also done a lot of work on LGBTQ health, really improving the experience of patient-provider relationships, giving people the tools that they need if they do face discrimination in Colorado health insurance plans, and really understanding what their rights are and what to do to make sure that they can access the care that they need. The other thing that we do is we work to elect pro-equality candidates in the state legislature who pledge to live out our values of making sure that LGBTQ Coloradans are represented in the state legislature. And so we endorse the slate of candidates. We give money out to candidates. I'm really hoping to elect pro-equality candidates to represent our interests in the state legislature. And so those are some of the key ways and some of the key areas that we focus on as a statewide organization.
You guys are an important voice on these issues at the Capitol. What are a couple of the bills you're working on in this 2017 session?
We have had two key priorities. One is a birth certificate bill, which would make it easier for transgender people to update the gender on their birth certificate. Because currently in Colorado, if you're transgender, you have to get a surgery, and then you have to go before a judge and prove to a judge that you had a surgery, and the judge ultimately decides whether you get to change the gender on your birth certificate. And we know that for transgender people who don't have an identity document that matches who they are, that they may face discrimination when they go to open up a bank account or go to register for school or even simply vote. And so with the last 2 years, we've run that bill. We've had 5 Republicans vote in favor of the bill in the House. But unfortunately, when we get over to the state Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, only by one vote, but Republicans the last 2 years have not given us a fair hearing. They've sent our bill directly to the Kill Committee and have not even heard testimony from people about how this bill would impact their lives. The second bill that we're working on this year is a bill to ban conversion therapy in Colorado. So in only 5 states in the District of Columbia do they have bans that prohibit conversion therapy on minors. There are states that have conversion therapy. And so in Colorado, we've worked the last 2 years to pass a ban that would prohibit state-licensed mental health professionals from practicing conversion therapy or any other effort aimed at changing a young person's sexual orientation or gender identity. The last 2 years, we've had one Republican and all Democrats vote in favor of that bill. But again, when we get over to the state Senate, again, controlled by Republicans, Republican leadership has continued to send our bill to the Kill Committee, so we have not been able to pass a ban on conversion therapy. So we, this year, will be working to pass the ban on conversion therapy, and we'll also be working to make sure that transgender people can get an identity document that matches who they are.
So the last thing I want to ask you about is the We Are One Colorado Tour. You're going to be in Aspen tomorrow night, 6 o'clock at Red Brick Arts Center. And Aspen's just one of many stops on your tour across the state.
The We Are One Colorado Tour is a 13-city tour to really talk about some of the key victories that we've won here in Colorado, including passing comprehensive non-discrimination and bullying protections, specifically protecting LGBTQ people from bullying and harassment and discrimination in employment, housing, and places of public accommodation. And we're also talking about how we we build on those victories and really what LGBTQ equality looks like in Colorado, how we can really invest in communities all across the state, ranging from Grand Junction, Durango, Pueblo, Sterling, and Fort Collins, and really how we continue to build on the We Are One Colorado tour.
My guest has been Daniel Ramos, Executive Director of One Colorado, the state's largest advocacy organization on LGBT issues. Thanks so much for speaking to KDNK, Daniel.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
The We Are One Colorado Tour stops in Aspen tomorrow night at 6 at the Red Brick Arts Center. You can connect to the group on Facebook by searching One Colorado. KDNK News intern Raleigh Burley sat down with local immigration lawyer Aaron Richards to discuss recent changes in national immigration policy as part of his ongoing series on immigrant rights.
I try to treat everybody with compassion. I try to take into account everybody's background and everybody's goals and create a plan for them from there.
What has changed since Trump's executive order?
On January 27th, he issued this order that essentially bans refugees from 7 countries. And these countries were listed by the Congress and the Obama administration as countries of concern. And the reason that they were concerning is that they don't have a government that is well-established enough to harbor a database relating to people's criminal histories and terrorist affiliations and things like that.
Is there any worry that such a ban could expand out to other countries?
There is a huge concern that it could expand. Recently, a leaked potential addition to that executive order listed about, I want to say, another 15 to 20 countries.
Wow, 15 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Including countries from Central and South America?
Not at this time.
Okay.
It's something that has been a worry of other immigration practitioners.
And your clients, what countries do they come from?
Most of my clients are from Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, a few from the UK. At this time, we don't know what executive orders are going to come out. Each of the executive orders, and there have been 3 that have to do with the immigration arm of the Department of Homeland Security, have come out without any notice. This refugee ban executive order, a version of it was leaked 2 days before the ban went into effect, but the ban took effect immediately. So we really don't know what's going to happen.
And what gives President Trump that legal authority?
The president is citing to a particular clause in the Immigration and Nationality Act, which was created by the judiciary and is power given to him by the judiciary and not by the Constitution. And that clause says that the president has the power to basically exclude anybody who is detrimental to U.S. interests. So it's it's a very broad term. And so that's the power that President Trump has alluded to gives him the ability to enact this order.
I'm speaking with Aaron Richards, an immigration lawyer here in the Roaring Fork Valley, about recent changes in national policy regarding immigration. I was talking to people earlier in this series about the Obama administration and how that was for immigration. And one person referred to him as the deporter in chief, saying that he deported the most immigrants of any president previous. Do you have any comment?
You know, that is true. He did deport over 400,000 people, and that is the most of any sitting president ever. I think the way that he did that, though, was actually really beneficial to a lot of people. In 2012, President Obama announced what we called the PEP program. It was basically enforcement priorities. It prioritized people for enforcement by how much they had either violated the criminal rules or the immigration rules in the United States. These people don't have any opportunity for relief, so it made court proceedings go much faster, focusing on getting rid of the criminals, but we were also telling the people who were not criminals, you know, if you get caught and you end up in court, if you will register with us and we find that it's in the best interest of the country for you to stay, like you've been paying your taxes, you've got U.S. citizen children that need support, you've got a U.S. citizen spouse that's sick, you've got U.S. citizen parents, whatever it is, if you register with us for every year, we'll let you stay. And if you qualify for a work permit, we'll get you a work permit so that you can do these things lawfully. And it created a direct path for children who were under the age of 15, were on track or had graduated high school to get a work permit, to be allowed to stay in the United States for a couple of years, possibly even renew that work permit and contribute to society.
Do you think those people are at risk now?
There has been one leaked potential executive order that says we're not going to have any more deferred action for childhood arrival work permits issued, but we're just going to let the ones that are currently out there expire. You know, if you have DACA and you're out there, this is definitely something to consider. I'm hoping that this DREAM Act that's pending right now is going to move forward. If you have an opportunity to talk to our representative, Scott Tipton, make your voice heard.
That was immigration lawyer Aaron Richards speaking to KDNK News intern Raleigh Burley. The extended interview is available at KDNK.org. Public schools face an uncertain future after Betsy DeVos's confirmation as U.S. Secretary of Education. Eric Galatis has more.
Colorado's education advocates are vowing to roll up their sleeves and continue the work of protecting public schools after Betsy DeVos was confirmed as Secretary of Education by the U.S. Senate. Amy Baca Olert with the Colorado Education Association says she was disappointed by the vote and notes lawmakers disregarded hundreds of thousands of educators and parents in the state who voiced opposition to DeVos, mainly for her lack of experience.
Somebody who herself had never attended public schools, sent her children to public schools, worked in public schools, and clearly by the Senate confirmation hearing, it was evident that she lacked a lot of knowledge.
During an overnight show of opposition, Colorado Democratic Senator Michael Bennett called DeVos's nomination an insult to students, families, teachers, and others working to improve the nation's public schools. U.S. senators received a reported 1.5 million calls a day about the nomination, and rallies were held across Colorado urging Republican Senator Cory Gardner to vote against DeVos. Gardner called the debate a healthy exercise in democracy and says DeVos has pledged to fight for public schools. Baca Olert says opposition to DeVos, who has pushed for policies to privatize public education, sparked a wave of grassroots engagement in Colorado, which she hopes will continue under the new secretary's leadership.
And so we're going to stay engaged. We won't stop. We're going to make sure that we continue to share our voices and to ensure that whether it be policy at the federal level or at the state or local level, ensuring a quality public education for every child.
DeVos's confirmation adds another billionaire to President Donald Trump's cabinet. Colorado senators split along party lines, with Gardner voting yes, Bennett no. Vice President Mike Pence stepped in to break a 50-50 tie. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Colorado officials have highlighted seven shovel-ready road and water projects if the Trump administration secures infrastructure funding. The National Governors Association sent that list, along with projects from 48 other states and territories, to the Trump administration Wednesday. Benta Berkland has more.
The Colorado Department of Transportation projects a $9 billion funding shortfall over the next decade. Lawmakers in both parties say they are acutely aware of the problem and want to tackle the increased congestion, potholes, and crumbling infrastructure. But Democratic Speaker of the House Crisanta Duran warned Republicans against doubling down on their philosophy of trying to create a dedicated funding source for roads in the state budget.
We have to make sure that if we come up with a transportation plan that invests in roads and bridges and transportation options, that we don't do that at the expense of kids. That is what I'm saying.
Republicans maintain they don't want to ask voters to approve a tax increase without also reprioritizing the existing state budget. They say they don't want to cut funding for schools. Even though there is no consensus on how to move forward, Duran says the discussions this year are unique because she's never before seen Republicans willing to put a tax increase on the table. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.